Hey, Megan, Dr. G here for SPKN, the Sport Professional Knowledge Network. And today we're joined by Allison Maurer, a veteran sports dietitian with more than 18 years of experience fueling high school and college, as well as professional athletes. Allison is the Associate Athletic Director of Student Health and Wellness at Knoxville Catholic High School in Tennessee. Previously, she's been the director of sport nutrition and fueling with the Pittsburgh Pirates, where she oversaw nutrition operations from the major league team all the way down to the Dominican Academy. Allison, welcome to SPKN.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So why don't we start by having you tell us how you got interested in nutrition?
Okay, so I've always, even in high school, I was always interested in nutrition. And so even, like I said, even in high school, I knew I wanted to be a registered dietitian. So a lot of times, you know, kids in high school now being in the high school setting, they're like, I don't know what I want to do. And for me, I always knew. And so I was always active as a kid, into sports, didn't play college sports. But it was actually my freshman year. We had home ec back then, and we had a nutrition unit. And that was really when I was like, this is kind of cool. So freshman year of high school, home ec. And so in between sewing and, you know, learning all those other things, nutrition was one of the units that we had. And I really enjoyed that. So it just kind of stuck. So I majored in nutrition and dietetics in college.
What about nutrition? I mean, like, I remember the plate, the circle, and you got to have this many carbs and that many vegetables. And, you know, all I remember.
I don't really know what it was. It just interested me. It's just, you know, I love people. I love being around people. I love interacting. I love, like I said, being active and that sort of thing. So I think that was more what interested me in nutrition more than anything else. And back then in the olden days, you know, in 2000, there wasn't sports nutrition. So that was not an avenue that, you know, going into college, I was like, hey, I want to do sports nutrition. It was just, what can a dietitian do? Let me go see. And I also wanted to double major in Spanish, but didn't end up, all the classes conflicted. So I wasn't able to do that. But I definitely wanted to take the nutrition component and just work in the community setting or whatever that might have looked like back then.
Yeah, that's funny because I don't think growing up in tennis, we never talked about nutrition
ever. No, never.
It wasn't part of the whole workout plan.
No, not at all. Not at all. I remember in high school going to the convenience store before soccer practices and getting like Laffy Taffys and an apple juice, and that was what I would eat before practice. Yeah. And you were like, I guess this is what we do. So
it was great for the first 20 minutes of practice, wasn't it?
Yeah. No doubt.
So did you start studying it then in high school too, even more, and like, you know, enhancing your performance or
No, not at all. Because like I said, I didn't know sports nutrition existed. I just knew that's the degree I wanted to pursue, maybe in the hospital setting, community setting, that sort of thing. So, you know, and again, back then in high school, it was just home ec. That was the only time you were going to get a nutrition unit in any sort of class. We didn't have girls health or a wellness class, or, I mean, I teach sports nutrition here now, lower level and then an upper level sports nutrition class. So that just, I mean, those weren't offered, but I guess it just kind of, I don't know, whatever it was about nutrition and that sort of thing, it just kind of stuck with me.
And all right, so let's do this career path and a career trajectory, because you found out it. So one, even like I'm thinking back then too, I didn't even know strength conditioning was a thing until like my sophomore, junior year of college either.
Right.
But I know you were at UC Boulder working, but so how did you give folks the kind of career paths and the opportunities in the RD sport world?
Yeah. So graduated from college, went to do my master's degree at Georgia State. And you know, you're doing the dietetic internship, and I remember coming home crying almost every day, be like, I spent 5 years doing this thing that I don't like, because I didn't get the hospital thing. I just couldn't connect with so many of the different avenues of nutrition. And my very last rotation of my dietetic internship was sports nutrition. So I worked with Rob Skinner and Leah Thomas at Georgia Tech. And so I was able to experience what sports nutrition back in 2002 looked like, which still was, you know, it was just mostly sitting down with student athletes and putting together some really benign meal plan, but not having any resources because there was no deregulation of meals. I mean, it was, you know, there was really nothing there yet. It was just talking to athletes about food and how to improve their performance with nutrition and fueling. And so I remember being like, this is it. This is what I want to do. So after my internship finished and I graduated with my master's in nutrition, there was no jobs. I mean, I was in Atlanta. It was a very saturated market. And so, you know, just kind of sitting there and thinking, all right, what next? And so I applied for a couple jobs at some hospitals. I was waiting tables. I'm like, well, this is great. I'm a registered dietitian now. I sat for the exam and I'm working at a restaurant in Buckhead. This is not what I thought this would be. So then I was contacted by Rob Skinner and he said, hey, listen, there's a job potentially at the University of Colorado in Boulder. Here's the deal though. And I said, what? He said, they want a dietitian, but they need a strength coach. And I'm like, never lifted weights before. Where do I sign up? So moved out there in 2004, summer of 2004. And so the agreement was obviously that I would do the dietitian, sports dietitian stuff as long as I was willing to learn and train and become a strength and conditioning coach, then that's what would make the job possible. So I said, yeah, let's do it. So trained for a year. I had great mentors, Vernon Stevens, Vic Cummins, Sarah Ramey, who's still in the field, Greg Finnegan. And so they kind of took me under their wing and, you know, threw me into the fire. And they were like, here's what this looks like. So and so that's, you know, doing essentially two full-time jobs was a lot, but it was, I would not change that experience for anything. I mean, it made me fall in love with strength and conditioning, which I get to do now again, and just really be able to completely put the two pieces of the puzzle together, you know, the nutrition component and the training component, and really mesh those two things together. So did that for a little over 3 years in Boulder, and then moved on to the University of Tennessee. I was there for almost 9 years and I was just doing nutrition there. So that was my first love anyway, nutrition. So I was excited to be able to just focus on one full-time job.
And we had such excellent strength coaches back then too.
We had amazing strength coaches.
Do you want to show your shirt there?
Yeah, show it off. No balls.
There you go. I'm sure G is thinking to himself, yeah, you know, it's so easy to become a strength and conditioning coach. You just offer it to anybody and they just, you know, boom, done.
You just have to get jacked.
And that was the thing back then. It was like, you could be a business finance major and be a strength coach. You know what I mean? And so like, I had no business really being a strength coach. I probably should have had an exercise science degree, but I didn't. And luckily you know, I tried my best to keep up with the changing trends and that sort of thing. But I mean, that thing, strength and conditioning could go off the rails really quick. And so can nutrition if the right pieces are not put together, that's for sure.
So let's come back to, we're going off the rails. I'm going to write that down. keep going with the career paths and the trajectory, because truly, a lot of folks don't realize the opportunities that are out there. We've even mentioned the word now, registered dietitian, and a lot of folks don't quite appreciate what that means versus, you know, all of the pseudoscience and gurus in the field too. So, you know, you're at UT for a while and then where from there, where at now, and then talk to us about RDs and the whole development of the nutrition profession.
Sure. So after I left UT, I just left and I, you know, took about 6 or 7 months to figure out what I wanted to be when I grew up. So I ended up teaching part-time at a school here in Knoxville, teaching PE and strength and conditioning for middle schoolers. And I was like, wow, here we are. So, but it was good. It was a good mental break that I definitely needed just from the rat race of college football for, you know, at that point it was 12 years or so in college sports. And so then after that, the spring of 2017, Pittsburgh Pirates called. And so there was a collective bargaining agreement in December of 2016, where once 2017 hit, every MLB organization had to have a registered dietitian on staff in some capacity. And so the Pirates said, you know, we're looking to hire. I was like, great, I don't think I want to do it. Thank you for, you know, the call. I'm good. Then Rob Skinner comes back into my life again and he says, you better go interview. Or, I mean, he used very different words, but I was like, okay, I'll go interview. So I went there and I know baseball. I liked baseball back then. My kids play baseball, but I went there, interviewed, and I was like, this is what I'm looking for. And so I said to them, I said, I don't want full time. I want to kind of play this out and see how I feel about all of this. And they said, that's fine, because we don't know if we want a full-time person. So I consulted for the 2017 season and then went full-time in 2018. And I loved it. I love baseball. I never in a million years thought I would. And great people, great organization, a different experience that I could have, I needed at that time. So it was really good. And then COVID happened, you know, as we all struggled through that. And that season was just really hard. I was in the bubble. I was away from my kids for 3 months. I was teaching part-time at Knoxville Catholic already anyway. So they brought me on in 2017 to teach two sports nutrition classes just to see how the kids would respond to it. And they're like, let's see what this looks like. And so I taught in the fall of 2017, and then again in the fall of 2018, we had 40 some kids the first year and then 96 that signed up for the next one. So yeah, so we added a third block, and the president was, he was like, when are we gonna get you full time? And I'm like, not ready yet. I'm liking this baseball gig. This is it's a great time. So did that. And then, like I said, COVID hit, and I always knew that I didn't want to travel that much for years and years. And so I stayed in the trenches a little bit at the high school here. So I would, in the off season of baseball, I would be in the weight room with football, helping their strength coach, you know, work the kids out and that sort of thing. And then I'd leave for spring training and then I'd be gone, come back and teach in the fall. So I did that 2020, and in 2020, their strength coach left to take a head football coaching job. And so I just was like, hey, guess what? I'm taking over. I didn't really give anyone a choice, but I didn't know what baseball was going to do yet. So he left in May. We had no idea if we were going to have a season or not. So I'm like, I'm going to take over football strength and conditioning. So I'm going to start writing the programming. This is what it's going to look like. And I didn't give them a choice. I just said, this is what I'm going to do. So I did that. Then we had baseball season. And like I said, it was hard. COVID was not easy on anyone. It just puts you in a different place when you're in a bubble, you're with the same people every day. Even though you're surrounded by people, you're so alone. And so finished that season and I came back to Knoxville and I said, okay, so how about that full-time gig? Like, are we ready to talk about this now? So the president said, yeah, let's talk. And so we worked out some details. I was able to write my own job description. I had a one-year plan, a three-year plan, and a five-year plan that I put together. Job descriptions for positions that I want to eventually hire. I was able to create my own job title. So he was like, all right, you know what this looks like. I don't. So let's go. So I did finish the 2021 season. I did go 2021 with the Pirates. And then, yeah, so from August of 2021 until now, I've been full time here at Knoxville Catholic. So
how many students in at that high school? Because that, I mean, it's really nice to have a nutritionist on staff.
Yeah, so there's actually two registered dietitians that we have on staff. So that is incredibly unheard of. There's about 625, 650 kids here. So for a high school that size, it's not that big. To have two full-time dietitians is huge. But that's kind of part of how I wanted to really start building this program and stuff. The other dietitian was an intern of mine and she graduated from here. So her dream was always to come back and teach at her alma mater. So, but yeah, the whole world of dietitians, sports nutrition, that sort of thing has evolved tremendously. And so, G, like you were kind of, I think, going towards the difference between a registered dietitian and a nutritionist. So anyone can be a nutritionist, right? You can go online and Google something or other and take a certification over a weekend and, you know, congratulations, you're a nutritionist because you answered, you know, these 10 questions correctly and you got a 90% or whatever it is. You know, as a registered dietitian, you have to go through the undergraduate program in nutrition. I mean, you're taking microbiology, organic chemistry, anatomy, physiology, all these community nutrition classes, medical nutrition therapy, like all these different classes. Then you are required to do a dietetic internship where you go through rotations from the clinical setting, diabetes, food service, long-term care, pediatrics, and you learn nutrition in four different disease states and that sort of thing. Then, you know, like I did my extra, like my choice hours, I did that in the sports nutrition realm. You can do eating disorders, all that. And then you have to sit for an exam to become a registered and licensed dietitian. So the biggest thing with nutritionists or gurus in baseball, you know, we always talk about everybody's got a guru. Yeah. It's if you have some sort of medical, if you have diabetes, if you have heart disease, if you have any sort of celiac disease, anything like that, as a nutritionist, it is illegal for you to provide medical nutrition therapy because you are not qualified and registered and certified to care for someone that has some sort of disease state or some sort of, you know, extra medical issue. So we deal with that all the time.
And that, we're not looking at breaking confidentiality, but can you give an example of what that looks like even at the high school level? If you got an athlete or a student there that has a medical condition complication that you're counseling through?
Yeah. So the biggest thing is, you know, food allergies, I mean, those are all over the place. So those are the ones that we see the most. But yeah, I mean, we have kids with Crohn's disease. That's one of the ones that I've seen so much more just in the last 5 to 7 years. And I think there's so much with the mental health component, the gut health, the brain health, and sleep. And it's linked to, you know, irritable bowel disease or Crohn's and that sort of thing. And it's not surprising that so many more kids are having issues. And so a lot of it is, so we have one athlete that struggles with that kind of stuff. Medication does help tremendously, but there's also situations where you have to be very diligent about what they're eating, when they're eating, the timing, that sort of thing. But I also think so many kids and just athletes in general have so many gastrointestinal issues that they just think is normal because it's always been that way, but it's really not normal. So some of them I think are just really not identified yet.
We were talking yesterday about the coaches that love to make kids work out until they throw up. Would that be one of those stomach issues?
No, luckily we don't have those coaches. And myself as a strength coach, I have taken the approach of I'm not a punishment. Like if you look at me and you think that you're being punished for something, then I'm not doing my job. I'm here to make you better, train you in the weight room, you know, work on running, conditioning, speed work, that sort of thing. But I don't think our coaches are even like that anymore. It's just kind of, at least here, what I've seen. I know it still happens, but it's like, what are we really accomplishing? Like, congratulations, you made your kid throw up. Awesome.
I think that's a really, really important thing to state with how you differentiated the registered versus non-registered nutritionist. Because I'll tell you, the stuff that I've seen on YouTube, or I have kids coming to me. I mean, last summer they were coming to me in droves about how they're going to get so much stronger now that they're taking the protein powder straight as opposed to with, you know, kind of. And I'm like, what?
Yeah. And you know, kids, and this is one thing that we spend a lot of time in my classes is supplements, because there's so many supplement stores that those kids walk in the door and they're like, well, there's $200 I can just put in my cash or my, you know, cash register. So we spend a lot of time talking about that stuff. And, you know, they'll go somewhere, oh, I went to so-and-so place and, you know, bought this, and then we talk through it, and okay, like maybe next time you send me an email or you reach out to me first, or, you know, that energy drink talk or anything like that. I mean, there's so much of that stuff that I've been able to Just being present all day, every day, answer those questions and kind of be on the front lines and stop some of it before it gets out of control.
Yeah. What's the biggest thing you've been dealing with right now?
Pre-workout.
As far as those.
Yeah, pre-workout, 100%. And one of the things that's so interesting is female athlete use in pre-workout has gone up a lot, a lot.
Wait, is it, I'm going to presume, you know, burn calories, lose fat, get more tone. Is it, what's the cultural influence? They're picking that up on TikTok or some sort of other social media?
It's just been one of those things that's been around for a while. For the boys, they take it pregame a lot, which worries me.
I did in high school.
Yeah, you idiot. Yeah.
I did. My heart rate was going through the roof.
I know. And that's one of the things that I'm teaching them is just because your heart rate is high doesn't mean you're performing better. It means that you actually can't get the proper recovery that you need between plays. So you're actually working extra hard and you don't even have to. So that's the big thing with the boys, and they love the beta alanine that makes them itch when they're going to lift. And, you know, they like to feel like they can run through a brick wall when they're lifting. And the girls, what I've heard with the girls, they're like, well, my boyfriend told me to try it. And I'm like, what? Geez. So that's like the big thing with the girls. And then it's like one girl does it and the other ones are like, I'll try it too. And the boys are the same way. Oh, I'll take it. You do it. Yeah. All right. You know, so it's just, and it's sometimes it's just very unintentional. But I'm like, you guys don't realize how dangerous that is because you had two energy drinks already. And then you decided on game day of your soccer game, you've never taken pre-workout before. And you're going to go ahead and take a pre-workout before you play. Like at what point, like where did this ever make sense? You know,
I mean, I remember in growing up in Cleveland, we used to drive to, especially when they banned ephedra in Ohio, we drove to Pennsylvania to pick up ephedra because we couldn't get it in Ohio. So we were driving across right to state line and we were buying the ultimate pack, like the ultimate pack or rip pack.
Animal pack.
Yeah. The animal pack. And then not Agent Orange, but like ultimate orange.
I can't remember.
Yeah, it was the animal pack, and then there was Ultimate Orange was one of the other pre-workouts that was big at the time. I used to just lose my mind. I mean, I was dialed in and it was not good.
That killed people.
Yeah.
I mean, this stuff is dangerous, and people need to know that you can't just go out and start doing this without talking to somebody. And that's why I think it's so important that we point out yet again, you don't want to talk to someone who got their YouTube nutritionist certification.
Yeah, no doubt.
So what do you also recommend then, at least with high schoolers or pro athletes, college athletes, you know, who are you recommending and what supplements too? Because as far as I understand it too, and I've read some of the literature and stay not totally up to date, but you know, there's only a handful of things that actually show much efficacy for athletes, depending on the condition or what they're really trying to do.
Yeah. So for professional athletes, it was actually really easy because everything had to be NSF certified for sport. So that's so easy to just be like, nope, can't take that. Sure, you can take that. You know, so that was pretty cut and dry. For the high schoolers, obviously, I'm like, a multivitamin is fine. You know, and they don't always think supplements means multivitamin. They think pre-workout, creatine, that sort of thing. One of the things that I'm doing with a handful of our football players this season is we're doing, it's an omega-3 creatine protocol. So tons of awesome research on brain health and creatine and omega-3s. And so it's not high doses. It's not any sort of, you know, research-based anything. It's just what I've read. And you know, what parent isn't going to be like, no, I don't want you to take care of my kid's brain. So they do. And I love creatine for so many reasons, the brain, the muscle building aspect of it, all kinds of stuff. But so we do a 5 gram dose of creatine and a 2000 milligram dose of omega-3s post practice Monday through Thursday.
Now, 2000 milligrams is it's an interesting amount.
Well, of omega-3s, it's 2 grams. So the recommendation is 2 to 4 grams of omega-3s daily. And I mean, I don't have a budget, so I would love to do 4 grams daily, but I just can't afford it. So that's why I have that on the lower end. So I'm just kind of playing around with it this year, but it's just, it's fun to just get to do some of that stuff and get kids aware of what things can help the brain and what things are actually beneficial. I mean, yeah, we do the basic stuff, you know, honey stinger stuff. We do cherry juice, electrolytes, like those things are considered supplements, but not necessarily what kids see as supplements. You know, they want the big, cool, you know, superhero sounding names of stuff.
So can I ask you, because I take an omega too, and I take creatine.
Not enough.
I'm sitting there, right? And I know that I just did my lab testing too. And I like to get into the specifics, and I like to use my examples too and talk about, not talking about myself, but, I'm going to look it up now here while we're sitting here. I think I'm taking 500 milligrams a day.
Of omega threes?
I think so. I'm going to look it up. It's not much. No. But I just saw the doc, and we just redid my labs, and my LDL is still a little high.
Was it?
But see, the new doc didn't give me the actual numbers, the lab results, and I've asked for the lab results to see it specifically. Yeah. But my LDL is still not where I would like it to be.
Well, and I'm curious what brand of omegas you're taking, if there's DHA and EPA in it, if there's not, like those are all factors that are going to be into.
So talk to us too then, as I'm looking this up, I'm going to get it. And talk to us too about how would you mentioned earlier NSF, and how should people look at the sport supplement industry then to know what to take and what's junk too? I mean, it's a tough thing to decipher.
Yeah. Most of it's junk. So that's an easy way to say it. But so any of your third party testing is what you want to look for. So the NSF certified for sport, informed choice for sport. Basically what that means is what the label says is what's actually in the product. So any other supplement that doesn't have some sort of third party testing, they can put that there's 25 grams of creatine and, you know, 3 grams of beta alanine. And they can put whatever they want on the label, but it doesn't have to actually have that in it. There's no laws or regulations in the world of dietary supplements. So you could go and fill a bunch of capsules with rice flour and, you know, dirt and sell it and say that there's something in it and there's nothing, and nobody's going to get mad at you. The only time that it's really going to get questioned is if there's adverse health effects. Someone has a heart attack, someone dies. Then the FDA is going to be like, maybe we should take a look at this, which is not, I mean, it's so backwards.
Is there anything for age-wise, you know, definitely don't do this before you're in high school or college or that let people know about?
Yeah, that's with creatine. That's always a question I get. Parents will ask, you know, when they can start their kid on creatine or even protein powder. This is my rule. And this is what I tell all the kids. When it comes to creatine, I'll say, if you can't do right by food, then you haven't earned the right to take creatine. So do not come and ask me if you can take creatine when I know you don't eat breakfast, you have a slice of pizza and fries for lunch, and you don't eat a post or a pre-practice snack, you're not hydrating well. Don't ask me those questions. Don't ask me if you can take the protein. If you can't do right by food, you haven't earned the right to do right or to take supplements. So, and they get it. They absolutely get it when I put it that way. Cause they're like, oh yeah. Cause I'll say, what is creatine or protein going to do for you if you are not doing the basics that your body requires? It's not going to do anything.
Such a good point. I have a nephew who, and other kids that, they see the protein is so easy to kind of measure when you're doing protein bars, when you're doing protein shakes, and they think, oh, that's all I need. Mm-hmm. And my nephew, you know, he would have 3 shakes and 2 bars and that was it all day.
Yeah.
And that's not, I mean, I think it's pretty clear. Hopefully, you know, we don't have people coming on here looking for that kind of information, but it's good to make sure that's not a good plan.
Yeah, exactly. Like you have to eat food first, and then supplements can find their way in there, but food first.
So what would be the practical advice then too for, you know, the average, let's say maybe, you know, 17 to 20 year old, you know, the kind of high schooler to early college, you know, athlete that's looking to, enhance their performance through nutrition and recover faster? You know, what are your kind of basic stuff that you do?
Basics, hydration for sure. And that is the one thing that is so underestimated by everyone. That people assume and they think, well, yeah, I drink a lot, but they really don't. And so one thing for that age group is take a 16-ounce bottle of water. How many of those do you drink in a day? And some of them will say, I don't know, like two or three. Okay, so that's 32 ounces or 48 ounces. You should consume one half your body weight in ounces of water a day. So if you weigh 200 pounds and you drink 48 ounces, you're not even at half of what you need. And that's one of the most basic, generic, and highly underestimated like fueling tactic that people, they just miss. And, you know, starting there is huge. And so, you know, that's for that age group, that's first and foremost the thing to consider. And then think about also the perception is I eat a lot. That's what every high schooler thinks they eat a ton. Every parent thinks their kids eat a ton. Yeah. And I'll say, okay, write down for 2 days what you actually eat. And you'll see this huge gap from lunchtime until dinner. It's like 8 or 9 hours. And I'll tell the parents, I say, yeah, you assume that your child eats a ton because they come home and they don't stop eating, but you missed the 10 hours that they were gone and they didn't eat a thing. And you missed the breakfast that they didn't eat because they stopped and got coffee on the way to school instead, and that was breakfast. So the perception of how much and how often people fuel is so inaccurate. And I think that those two things, hydration and actually physically write down what you eat in 2 days and see how underfueled you are. You might be overfed. You might have eaten a ton of crap, but you're so underfueled and undernourished, if that makes sense. You got calories, but did you get nutrients?
I still pull out, you know, like what a 4,000 or 5,000, 6,000 calorie a day, you know, meal plan sort of looks like.
Yeah.
To the same thing, because I'm coaching and I'm around it and helping out, you know, kids and of all ages too. And you sit there and you just, then they look at that for a second and they're like, yeah, I don't eat that much.
Yeah. Yeah. And you're like, I told you so.
Yeah.
So
and, one hand. And I'm not trying to be right. Yes. You're just saying like, look, I hear you, but let's look at it and realize that you're, especially on the weekends, you know, they're probably missing 1,000 to 2,000, 3,000 calories a day.
Yeah. Cause they'll eat maybe twice a day on weekends. Yeah. Maybe. Yeah. And I have a handout that I really like, and it talks about nutrient dense versus calorie dense foods. Yeah. And foods that are just calorie dense and foods that are nutrient dense and calorie dense. And that really helps kids kind of put into perspective too, like, oh, all right. So, you know,
do your own kids, because you got three boys, how do you get them to eat broccoli?
They do a good job. And Manny, he's almost 16 now, believe it or not. Yeah. Remember him walking around the weight room with his car slippers when he was like two?
It's awesome, man.
I know. So that kid has grown 5 inches and put on 45 pounds in the last year. So he has gotten super interested in, which I never in a million years would have thought that any of my kids would be interested in what I do. And so he's really kind of just, he gets it. He knows he's trying to put on weight. So he's the one that, I mean, he loves to cook. So we're having Brussels sprouts and salmon and all that kind of stuff because he likes it and he knows it's good for him. He'll eat guacamole because he knows it's high calorie. He took my nutrition class. So we had to switch over to natural peanut butter because I was like, wow, you listened. So, and then it's, and my little one, Nico, I mean, I can't get that kid to eat anything but like gummy bears and and that's about it, apple juice. But he's starting to catch on. My whole thing with kids is, and what I've always done with my kids, two things. One, I'm going to put everything that I made on their plate. I don't care if they eat it or not. I just want them to be exposed to it and see it. I'm not one of the, you have to eat everything. You have to clean your plate. You have to eat 4 bites of broccoli. Like that's, I've never been like that. But I'm also not going to make another meal. So with the boys too, and Nico, he's my one that will toe the line. He'll say, well, can I have a banana instead? It's healthy. I'm like, banana wasn't on the menu. Sorry, buddy. So when he was little, I mean, he went to bed hungry quite a few nights because I'm like, I'm not playing this. I'm going to have watermelon instead because it's healthy. That was not on the menu. So you get to go to bed hungry. Kids are going to eat. Like, that's the thing. Parents assume that their kids are going to starve. If I don't make them something that they'll eat, then they're not going to eat anything. Cool. Then when they're hungry enough, they'll eat whatever you put in front of them. So so that's just always been my rule with my boys is here's what's on the menu. Eat what you want. Don't eat what you don't want. I'm exposing you to all of it. But if you don't want any of it, you get nothing.
So the folks that are listening, how did you personally come to that decision-making? Because for a lot of parents, they would be like, oh, okay. Like they're going to acquiesce and just give in. Like where did that resolve then, you know, come from?
I
or how?
I just want to win. I'm going to win. Guess who's the boss?
Nice.
Me. And so, you know, like complain all you want. I could care less. And that's what, you know, I think we're parents. Well, I don't want to hear them complain or they're going to be fussy for the rest of the night. Cool. But guess what? I'm going to win that fight. So just get a little competitive.
There.
There's like no other way to put it. Like just, you know, suck it up for a little bit. Yeah. The kids are going to be super cranky and hungry and fussy and whiny. And you know what? I'm going to win. It's just...
That's the parenting way.
I know. Totally.
It's a supportive but also direct way. And you're not going to be, I forget the parenting style. I'm grasping for the word permissive. Permissive is the parenting style where they, you know, kind of will acquiesce and say, and they're like, oh, okay, it's fine. We'll just do this time. And this time.
Yeah. I'm going to count to three kind of person. No, I don't. It's takes up too much time and effort. So I can't. Yeah. So for all those parents out there, just hold on. They'll grow out of it.
What should the average high school, how many calories should an average high school athlete, it's an impossible question.
How to calculate, how should somebody calculate the calories that they need for their given height, weight, and activity level?
Right.
For high schoolers, I don't even touch that. Honestly, right.
That's good.
It's too slippery of a slope. To be completely honest, I, you know, we're learning the basics of, you know, a good balanced breakfast. I just had a really great conversation with a few of our baseball players the other day and, you know, they just wanted breakfast ideas. Cool. Let's just talk about breakfast ideas. And here's, you know, so why don't you try waffles with peanut butter, banana slices, and a little bit of syrup on it. Why? Oh, because you get the carbs. You're going to have some of the good fats with the peanut butter, some protein there. You're getting fruit. You get a little bit of sweet because you get your syrup, have that, you know, like. Those are the conversations I'm trying to have with these kids. If I get in the weeds, and I didn't even do this with Major League Baseball players, get in the weeds with numbers. Baseball players are too number oriented. I am not going to give them a bunch of numbers to focus on because, I mean, it can go sideways real fast. And so
what does that mean too, sideways or going off the rails, right? What is it specifically? What do you mean by that? Why do you avoid that?
Just because I don't want kids to get stuck in their own heads, right? I don't want them to get so caught up in these minute details that they miss the overall goal of fueling for performance. So if I have a kid who gets stuck on, you know, I have to make sure I get, you know, 80 grams of protein a day, and that's their main focus, but then they forgot to eat everything else, or they didn't get heart healthy fats, or they didn't hydrate well, then I totally didn't do my job, you know, and it just went completely off the rails or sideways or upside down or whatever. So
you remind me of the Tennessee baseball player I had back in the day. He used to tell me too, he was eating like 8 chicken breasts a day. And I was just sitting there like, yeah, he's like, how come I'm not gaining weight? But I'm eating all these chicken breasts. I'm like,
it's just chicken.
Calories, dude. You need calories. You know, I don't know how you eat anything else the rest of the day if you ate chicken, 8 chicken breasts.
Oh, yeah. So gross.
You only weighed 190, 95 pounds.
Yeah. So yeah, it's just, you know, I just can't get caught up. And in my classes, we talk about eating disorders. We talk about, you know, perception, body image, that sort of thing. And it's just, especially now post pandemic, you know, the instance of eating disorders, especially in boys and males, has gone through the roof. There's just too much time to do a lot of nothing. And so
do you find that is it still kind of holding that you're seeing that boys are trying to kind of get bigger and ripped and more and more muscle mass, and girls are trying to get thinner and leaner? And
yeah, the thing with girls though now, I mean, a lot of them are starting to take creatine and stuff too. They're kind of in that same boat that the boys have been for so long. You know, they need the D1 scholarship. They need, they're training multiple times a day like the boys are. So it's all over the place. But for the girls, they have to meet this like societal norm, plus they have to be the best athlete they can be. So it's tough. You know, and the boys, even in the weight room, I'm like, you know, I never put bicep curls on any workout because I'm like, you're going to go home and do 25 sets of bicep curls. So I'm not wasting my time with you by putting bicep curls in your workout. So, you know, it's just
smart.
Yeah. It's just what they're going to do those different things anyway. So I need to focus on the things that are the most important when I have them in my time frame.
What's the, can you tell us what are the resources to go to for good nutrition information, as well as folks that are looking for career advancement? I'm thinking of like the collegiate sport professional group and others too. Who would you recommend or name drop to?
Yeah. So the Collegiate and Professional Sports Dietitians Association. So that's CPSDA. I know it's a long one. So the website is sportsrd.org. They have a lot of free resources. They have job postings. Whenever there's, you know, I mean, it's crazy to think how many job postings there are now. I remember when I first started, there was like one job every 2 years that would come up. Now there's like two a day that pop up. But that's a really, really great resource. The IOC is a really great resource for nutrition education material and just information. I'm trying to think of some of the other ones. Today's Dietitian is a really, really great resource. That's more articles and stuff like that. So I really like to, you know, take a look at that and see what they have in their newsletters and that sort of thing. I read so much research that it's not like the fun kind of stuff that I just get to look up. But there's on Instagram, there's one girl, it's Fueling High School Athletes is her handle. And she's got some really cool stuff that pops up. And so I really like to follow her. There's so many dietitians in the professional realm in the collegiate realm too, that have some really good content. Duke Sports Nutrition, North Carolina Sports Nutrition, they have some really good stuff that they come up with.
Anybody you want to throw under the bus, or what are the sort of things that you see out there that you're like, oh my gosh, I can't believe this is so wrong, or it's coming from somebody that should know better?
Liver King.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, yeah. My kids talk about the Liver King too.
Oh my gosh. We
just talked about it. Yeah.
Yeah. After we had our protein unit, we watched one of his videos of him eating. He just films himself eating. And the kids were like, I'm like, you guys follow that stuff. You think it's cool. But that, it's just, I'm like, you can't tell me that.
He's all natural. He's all natural, right?
Yeah, right. I'm like, nobody gets that vascular, and then I make fun because I'm like, look how red he is. It's from all like the hemoglobin and iron that he's got in his system. He's turning red.
Where we have to say allegedly. According to sources.
Yes, allegedly.
YouTube is not a source.
Oh my gosh.
Let me put that out there again.
He's probably the one that I've heard more than any.
Yeah.
This year. I mean, it's
the guys are just so on board with that.
We talk about fitness influencers as well as other gurus and, you know, even the so-called scientists, but the way that some of these characters are getting their drugs and supplements and But they leverage that to obviously transform their body into like really kind of, you know, the socially desirable body, right? Like big, ripped, muscular, right? And then they tell you how easy it is, or follow me for more training secrets and nutrition stuff. And you're like, guys, like, and it's men and women. It is really, you know, wild and dangerous with all the nonsense that they're on and they're talking about.
Yeah. It creates some really, really good conversations though. It really does. And I'm so excited about what high school sports nutrition is going to look like in the next decade, because just seeing the kids and watching the wheels turn and getting and seeing them think critically, it's so much fun to just kind of see the perceptions change. And then, you know, the arguments that they start to have with their friends or with their parents. And, you know, it's been pretty cool.
That's great. Yeah. Well, we have to have you come back on because there's so much more we need to talk about. I personally would like to have someone talk about making weight, whether gaining or losing it. But we'll save that topic for next time.
Thank you very much for having me. This is great. I hope to connect again sometime soon.
Thanks for listening. Make sure to leave us a 5-star review and hit the follow button because there's more sport knowledge on the way. If you're interested in more information or want to engage in further conversation about these and other issues in sport, visit our website at spknmedia.com. To stay updated on all things SPKN, follow us on social media at spknmedia or email us at team@spknmedia.com, and we'll be happy to welcome you to the SPKN community.